From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. New England's gruesome brush with supernatural hysteria did not end with the Salem witch trials in the 17th century. Almost two centuries later came the Great New England Vampire Panic. Wait, what? Abigail Tucker is a staff writer for Smithsonian Magazine, and she wrote about historians who are documenting cases when rural residents set aside their Yankee piety and feverishly exhumed graves and mutilated the corpses of suspected bloodsuckers. The panic is largely forgotten by history, but with Halloween creeping up and our Edgar Allan Poe special airing tomorrow, we thought it was a perfect time to dig it up. Abigail, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So what kind of evidence have archaeologists and historians and folklorists discovered of this vampire panic in New England?
The evidence that they've uncovered varies in terms of its substance and scope. There was this one exciting find in Connecticut of a grave from the early 1800s that had been tampered with. But a lot of the evidence is on paper, town histories, genealogies, things like that. And then, of course, the most famous vampire exhumation case in the late 1800s, that of Mercy Lena Brown of Exeter, Rhode Island, was covered in the national and indeed international press because a reporter, a fearless reporter from the Providence Journal, attended her exhumation and wrote about it.
What convinced people that the vampires were in their midst? You know, why was a young woman like Lena Brown chosen to be exhumed?
What was happening in the 1800s, particularly, and also the late 1700s in New England, was that there were these terrible consumption outbreaks, tuberculosis, a wasting disease, where people would just get these terrible fevers, you know, lose a ton of weight, and get these hacking coughs, which also could sometimes produce blood on people's mouths because they were coughing that hard. And they kind of looked like they were being devoured by something. And so these people hearing these strange stories from Europe and seeing, you know, the terrible fate of their loved ones and neighbors kind of put two and two together and thought, hey, maybe a dead person is coming back and sucking the blood out of the living.
Yeah.
So that's basically the logic behind it. And these were very rural areas where even though disease theory and medicine had made big leaps, these ideas hadn't penetrated the farming communities. A doctor might even tell a farming family that their child was dying of tuberculosis, but people, for whatever reason, desperation or ignorance, decided to go another path.
So grim. Any idea of how many exhumations were made during this period of time?
You know, the folklorist who's done the most work on this topic, he's been studying it for the last 30 years. His name is Michael Bell. He lives part-time in Rhode Island. He has uncovered dozens of these exhumations, and he thinks that that's just the tip of the iceberg. He thinks that there were hundreds of these things happening in rural New England throughout the 1700s and 1800s.
Do we have any idea how this happened? I mean, are we talking about mobs with pitchforks here?
It strangely seems to have varied from community to community and state to state. Some states, I think, particularly Maine and Massachusetts, had relatively sterile exhumations where they'd kind of like dig up the person and check for signs of vampirism and then discreetly flip the body over and, you know, call it good and rebury the body. But sometimes, you know, these became sort of community-wide occasions. In Vermont in particular, there were almost festive exhumations where somebody would be dug up under suspicion of being a vampire. And then, you know, not only would they be exhumed publicly, but sometimes their internal organs, particularly the heart, would be removed and burned in one instance in a blacksmith's forge. Michael Bell thinks that the reason that these unburials, varied so widely was the sort of structure of rural cemeteries in the area. In a place like Rhode Island, where the exhumations tended to be secretive, that was because the cemeteries were smaller and sparsely distributed, you know, dozen people buried here, a dozen people buried there. Whereas in Vermont, the cemeteries tended to be central depositories where lots and lots of people would be buried. And so it would be really hard to secretly sneak in there and pick someone and exhume them and then put them back. So they sort of had to involve the community.
Wow, it's so fascinating. One of the bodies that was exhumed, you mentioned her, Mercy Lena Brown, also called Lena Brown, from Exeter, Rhode Island. Her body was actually quite well preserved. She was buried in the winter. And was it just a young woman there when she died following her, I guess, her mother and her sister also of the consumption? Tell us a little bit about that story. Why did this capture the imagination of so many?
Yeah, you know, it's like so many of these, just a very tragic story, a farm family that was prone to the consumption or tuberculosis. The sister and the mother died almost a decade before Mercy. She died very quickly and was buried. At about the same time, her brother, Eddie, was getting worse from his own tuberculosis case and was suffering very much, and the community wanted to do everything that they could to save him. So even though this was the late 1800s, it was the 1890s, you know, after so much medical work on tuberculosis, the family elected to exhume all three of the women because the older daughter, I think her name was Mary Olive, and the mother had died 10 years earlier. Their bodies were almost completely decomposed, but Mercy had died much more recently, and it had been in the winter when it was cold, and this was just the early spring when they were making this last-ditch effort to exhume them. Her body was in pretty good condition, and they assumed that, wow, you know, this isn't because it was cold or because she only died recently. This is because she's a vampire and has been feasting on her brother. And so they performed this really kind of grisly ritual where they removed her heart and burned it and gave the ashes to Eddie and kind of an elixir for him to drink. Yeah. But of course, he ended up dying.
We're talking with Abigail Tucker about the Great New England Vampire Scare, which peaked in the 19th century. It is a truly grisly, though largely unknown, part of New England history when graves were dug up and bodies mutilated out of the fear that those corpses would come back to life as vampires. Abigail wrote about the panic for Smithsonian Magazine. You spoke with Paul Barber. He's a folklorist, and he looks at the logic behind these myths, which he thinks arises from this rather astute observation of decay. The bloated dead bodies may appear that they've recently eaten. A staked corpse may scream due to the escape of natural gases. So actually, some of this makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, his specialty is more the origin of these myths in Europe, and he thinks that these superstitions were kind of the European peasants' way of getting at the essence of contagion, which is this idea that dead people can cause others to die. And it's not by, you know, sneaking out of the grave at midnight and sucking their blood. It's through the spread of disease. And so he thinks that when people exhumed the dead, and particularly the recently dead, they would see these signs that could be read as evidence of vampirism, like, you know, a bloated body looks like, you know, has recently gorged on something, or a dribble of blood from the mouth looks like the body has eaten, when really these are just kind of natural signs of decay. But it fit into their theory, you know, what they saw happening but didn't quite understand from a medical perspective, that disease does spread, and particularly a disease like tuberculosis.
Well, you went much further than I would, Abigail, and you actually walked into one of these old cemeteries where bodies had been exhumed. What were you looking for? You were with Michael Bell.
Yeah, I went a couple of times, actually. I did go on Halloween night by myself. Well, not totally by myself. Oh. I had just
You're a braver woman than I.
Well, I don't know if my husband's ever going to forgive me. I had recently come back from maternity leave, and so I was toting my 9-month-old daughter with her fuzzy pink bunny hat on, and she was sort of like the perfect vampire bait. And we went and, you know, lingered at this grave for a little while, and it's a very ordinary sort of place. I was there in the day and the night, and, you know, the grave is, in contrast to some of the graves around it, very well tended and has a lot of offerings left by sort of fans of Mercy, you know, clever things like plastic vampire teeth or a little charm necklace or, you know, just coins, things like that. So I saw it with Michael Bell in sort of a folklore context. And then I also went back with some of Mercy's descendants. She obviously didn't have children because she died at the age of 19, but she has distant relatives who kind of guard her legacy today. They brought to the cemetery on this very beautiful morning this kind of exquisite quilt that Mercy had sewn when she was a teenager. And so to see the cemetery in that context, it made it sort of a lot more human, and it was really kind of a special place to be instead of frightening.
You know, before they were pale, glamorous objects of affection in multi-million-dollar film franchises, vampires were really, really, really scary.
They really were. And to think about these farm communities being racked by this disease that was just picking people off one by one, you know, the idea of tuberculosis in the mid to late 1800s is even scarier than Bram Stoker's Dracula. Just a terrifying time, and people were doing whatever they could to survive, you know, physically and also psychologically.
Abigail Tucker, I want to thank you so much for your work on this. It's such a fascinating story.
Thank you so much for having me.
Abigail Tucker, staff writer for Smithsonian Magazine. She wrote about the truly tragic New England vampire panic that pretty much began in the late 18th century and peaked in the 19th century. You can read her absolutely absorbing story in the Smithsonian at wordofmouthradio.org.